I'd like to know, and I think you'd like to know too, that in a day of science, in which science is the privileged way of knowing the world, what do these theistic arguments that the Catholic Church has looked to, we often talk of St. Thomas's Five Ways, for instance, in a world of science, what do these arguments really say? How relevant are they? Well, with me right now to work on this question is Dr. Gerard Verschuren. He's a human geneticist who earned a doctorate in the philosophy of science. He has studied and worked at universities in Europe and the United States. And he is the author of an outstanding book, A Catholic Scientist Proves God Exists. Dr. Verschuren, good to have you with me. Thanks.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
Why don't we, let's start really just asking, science itself is the privileged way that we are looking at knowledge in this era. Can science prove God's existence?
The answer will probably baffle many people. We expect all our answers from science nowadays, because
right.
Science has an impressive track record, and we think anything that is reliable must come from science.
Right.
But the amazing part is that science may be able to do a lot, but it cannot do certain things. And one of the things science cannot do is prove something. I know, we get bombarded all the time that science proved this and science proved that,
mm-hmm.
but if you look at it from a deeper level, there is no real proof in science. We can confirm things by experiments, but at the same time, someone else can come up with a better hypothesis, and then everyone says, oh, the previous hypothesis was not good enough,
right.
So we have to revise everything.
So it's always tentative.
It's always tentative, provisional, and it keeps changing and changing and changing. If you look at the history of science, it keeps changing all the time.
Yeah.
Even great people like Albert Einstein thought for a long time that our universe was eternal. And then someone, a priest, for instance...
That's true, yes.
The famous Lefebvre, he came up with the idea that there is a beginning of the universe and that it was not eternal. So we have to revise things. In genetics, we fought for a long time, two decades, that we had 48 chromosomes and we have only 46.
Hmm.
So what happened to those other two? They disappeared.
Right, right.
Science can never really prove, and besides, it cannot even prove its own assumptions. It assumes that there is a world outside of us. How can you prove that?
Right.
We could all be dreaming, a nightmare, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Or how can it prove that there is order in this world? It's not possible. So if we want to prove that God exists, we cannot go to science. Sorry. Disappointing, maybe. But we cannot prove, and we cannot even disprove God's existence in science.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Sure. It certainly does. I mean, science is, again, is great for certain things, but it can't do everything.
Correct.
You use the example here of a metal detector. A metal detector is a wonderful thing if you're trying to detect metals. But if you're trying to detect melons, it's not so good. It doesn't work.
No, it's not so good. And we can never say there are no melons because the detector did not detect it.
Yeah. Let me just step back a bit here. People make the mistake that everything we know is somehow attributed to science. And that gets confused with the idea that Christians claim that we can find a God in what we know rather than in what we don't know. So scientists have a very good idea of the things we know, but they can't claim control or providence over everything we know. Are we in danger? Are Christians sometimes in danger of, as science increases its range of knowledge, are Christians sometimes in danger of running to those places that science hasn't touched yet and saying, oh, God must be there. If we didn't find him here, then he must be there. This kind of the God of the gaps problem.
Yeah, that is a serious problem. For the gaps in our scientific knowledge, they get very easily filled. When time progresses, we discover that this is possible and that is possible, and the science couldn't prove it, could not say much about it, and then all of a sudden we can say something about it.
Right.
So we shouldn't locate God in the gaps of our science. God is not a material entity. That's why science cannot touch God. And I'm saying a non-material entity is not a gap in science because it has nothing to do with science.
That's right, yeah.
We cannot test God in a laboratory. Then we put God below us, not above us. God cannot be trapped by any kind of ingenious experiment. Do neutrinos exist? Probably.
Yeah.
Most scientists will say, oh, yes, they do. It has not been proven yet, but let's say they exist. But God is not a hypothesis. Hypothesis is something you hold on for a while until you find a better one or whatever. That is not what God is about. We can never close a search for God with the conclusion that there is no God. That's impossible. It's like saying there are no black swans until we find one. But again,
right.
a swan is a material entity. So maybe we can take a picture of one and then say, this is my proof. Is it a real proof? Not really. Maybe it was a painted swan. We don't know. So we have to do much more. Fortunately, if you want to prove that God exists, you cannot go to science, you cannot even go to math, but you can go to something else we all have, whether we are atheists or Christians or agnostics or Catholics or Protestants or a Hinduist. There is one thing we all have in common, and that is our rationality.
Mm-hmm.
We can reason, we can use logic, and through that, and that is the main thing of my book, A Catholic Scientist Proves That God Exists. He doesn't prove it as a scientist, but as a person that has the power of reason. And everyone has reason, and through reason we can prove that God exists.
Mm.
And no one can attack those proofs.
Yes.
In science, we can attack them all the time. We say, I have a better experiment. Or
that's right. And that's one of the strengths of science.
Yes.
Yeah,
you say that right. Yeah, that's a good point.
Can we say that the question of God is certainly a factual question, but it's not a scientific question?
Yes, you can definitely say that. For there are facts in science, and there are facts in religion, there are facts in theology.
Mm-hmm.
If God exists, if we say yes, that's a fact.
Yes.
And if God does not exist, then my facts were wrong. Then I had the wrong fact. It's not a scientific fact, but it is a fact of reality.
Mm-hmm.
Science deals with reality, but that is the material part of reality. Religion deals with the non-material parts of reality. And those are still facts.
Right.
If I say that God is triune, three persons in one,
yes,
that is a fact.
Right.
Or it's not a fact, and then I was wrong. Or my facts were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The facts were not really facts. This is a little heavy stuff now.
Yes.
I think
very good. Let's go then to some of those proofs of God's existence. They don't come from science, because science deals only with material entities that can be quantified. What do you find to be the most compelling of the proofs, the theistic proofs?
Yeah, in my book, I mentioned five of them. There are actually more than five, but I think they are all pretty strong and definitely very convincing. That's what I try to show in my book. If you follow logic and if you follow the premises that we start from, you have to go with them. I think one of the best ones is what they call the argument from motion.
Okay.
I don't like that word motion because that sounds like it's a physical concept.
Right. And
St. Thomas Aquinas didn't mean that. He was not talking about balls on a pool table that hit each other, and then there is a cue ball that starts the whole thing. So I don't like the word motion. But let's say it's the argument from causes. Everything has a cause. Every scientist will agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
If some scientist tells you, hey, I found something that doesn't have a cause, then they will attack you from all over the place.
Right.
You have to come up with a cause. And that's what the most important argument starts with. It says everything that came into existence must have a cause. It was caused by something. And then we say, for instance, I think I used in the book radioactivity, if there is a radioactive process, a decay, there must be a cause mm-hmm. behind it. And then, of course, scientists will say, what is the cause of that, and what is the cause of that,
right.
and what is the cause of that? Like little kids always keep asking, why is that, why is that, why mm-hmm. is that? And they never stop asking. So if you do that, you will never get out of that endless loop of asking and asking and asking. So there must be something that chain of causes, that all the steps to a radioactive decay or whatever example you use, or every cause of your existence, your parents, and the parents had parents, and the parents had parents. But where do we end? Yeah, you could end with the first human being. But still, then the question is, why? The why question, what is the cause that human beings can generate human beings?
Right.
What is the cause of that series of causes?
Mm-hmm. Dr. Verschuren, we've got to take a break. We'll come back and pick it up from there. My guest, Dr. Gerard Verschuren, a Catholic scientist, proves God exists.
Are you considering placing your home on the market? John Garmo is a supporter of Ave Maria Radio with more than 19 years of experience helping home buyers and sellers like you. Give him a call for an honest and free comprehensive market analysis of your home. Get up to $1,000 back when you buy or sell your home with John. Call 248-408-8234 or go to MichiganHomesRealty.com. Look for the many testimonials from satisfied clients. Call John at 248-408-8234 today.
You don't think it'll happen to you twice. First, it was a fire. My agent was right there and helped me rebuild. Then the tornado destroyed everything again. Both times, my independent agent and auto owners took care of me like someone takes care of family.
For whatever lies ahead, we're always there. Auto Owners Insurance.
For your no-obligation quote, please call Choice Insurance at 734-641-4200.
Myler & Zipka Certified Public Accountants is proud to support Ave Maria Radio programming. Myler & Zipka offer great services to WDEO listeners in Metro Detroit for all of your accounting and tax needs. Call Ken Zipka and let him know you appreciate him helping to keep Catholic radio alive in this area. Ken can be reached at 734-930-5500. That's 734-930-5500 or on the web at mspccpa.com.
Deacon Skin and Surgeries is a comprehensive dermatology center on the border of Troy and Rochester Hills, south of M59, and in Dearborn, west of Telegraph. Deacon Skin and Surgeries perform full skin exams and focus on the diagnosis and treatment of all types of skin cancer and precancerous lesions. All are board-certified dermatologists and fellowship-trained surgeons. Call 248-852-1900. Deacon Skin and Surgeries, a beacon for patient care. 248-852-1900.
Ave Maria Radio invites you to activate your faith by participating in a pro-life rally and the Jericho March. The rally marks the start of 40 Days for Life and will be on Sunday, February 23rd at 2 p.m. outside the Planned Parenthood on Professional Drive in Ann Arbor. The keynote speaker will be attorney James Cresta, and immediately following the rally, there will be a one-mile Jericho March around the block. Again, that is Sunday, February 23rd at 2 p.m. outside the Planned Parenthood in Ann Arbor. On Tuesday, March 10th, Steve Ray, founder of Footprints for God, will be speaking about the life and times of St. Paul and the cities he visited and adventures he had along the way. The talk will be at the corporate travel offices at 41780 West 6 Mile Road, Suite 100 in Northville. You can RSVP online at ctscentral.net. Add your event to the community calendar at avemariaradio.net. Just click Community.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a non-profit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Dr. Gerard Verscheren, author, most recently, of A Catholic Scientist Proves God Exists. And before the break, we were talking about the argument from cause, or the argument from motion, argument from causes, and working back to the idea of a first cause. And you were saying, you were using the image of parents and taking it back. You know, this child has a parent that which was a child, and that child had a parent which was once a child, and you just go back. So why don't we pick it up from there?
Okay. Even if you have a long chain, it might be endless. It could have a beginning and an end. It doesn't really matter. But no matter what choice you choose, that chain of causes is hanging in the air.
Mm-hmm.
It has no foundation to rest on.
Right.
It needs a foundation to rest on. It needs a beam to hang from. And that beam, or that foundation, is what Thomas Aquinas called the first cause.
Mm-hmm.
The first cause is not at the beginning of the sequence. It is above that sequence. It is the beam from which that whole series of causes hangs from. Or, to use another image, it's the foundation for it to rest on. And without that foundation, everything collapses. Without that beam that it hangs from,
mm-hmm.
the thing would fall down, or it would float in the air.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's not an explanation. The scientific explanation can never do the final step. It has to step outside the chain of causes and say, why is there something rather than nothing?
Yes.
That's the famous question that has haunted us for centuries. And some people say, oh, okay, everything that came into existence can generate itself or produce itself. It's the cause of itself. That is a logical error, for it would have to exist before it came into existence.
Right, right. Yes,
it's absurd.
You often hear people say, well, if you're claiming that everything has a cause, then of course you have to ask the question, is God, you know, does God have a cause? But what you're saying is, no, it's not that everything has a cause, but everything that comes into existence has a cause.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You hit it, the nail right on the head. It's everything that came into existence. And it's amazing how some scientists, like, for instance, the famous Hawking, who started
yeah.
a lot of stuff, he said, oh, that's very simple. The universe generated itself. And so, and if you come up with God, then I'm going to say, why doesn't God have a cause? So in other words, you did not end the infinite regress of causes. You keep going and going, and God, what is the cause of God?
Right.
He didn't understand, or he didn't want to understand, that only something that comes into existence must have a cause.
Right.
And God is existence itself.
Right.
So he is uncaused. He has not a cause. But he makes other causes outside himself possible.
Yes.
And that's you and me. You can be as a father or as a child, there is a cause for you, and you create causes. That's what God does for us.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a pretty strong argument here. Everything that comes into existence must have a cause. Everyone accepts that. Even a scientist will, or not, not even, but they must accept that. Everything that comes into existence must have a cause. So it's a self-evident starting point. If you deny that, then the whole thing collapses.
Right.
But you cannot deny it. It's self-evident. And then you have to avoid infinite regress, so going on infinitely to the past or to the future or whatever, for then there is no foundation for the chain to rest on. There is nothing to hang from. So there must be a first cause, and that first cause is a necessary being which does not need a cause for itself. So that's where the buck stops, as Peter Kreeft always says.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
where the buck stops.
Let's move the discussion to the argument from design, then. This is an argument that people often tie to St. Paul in Romans chapter 1, where we find that since the creation of the world, God's existence has been known through the things he has made. The argument of design does begin with empirical observations, right? You're looking at the world, and the world appears to have been designed.
In the traditional way, yes.
Yes.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. So in that sense, is this a more attractive argument to scientists?
No, I don't agree with that. I know that has been claimed many times,
mm-hmm.
but unfortunately, in the interpretation you gave it, and most people give it that interpretation, it is an argument like science uses arguments, and they can't prove anything. They can make things more likely, or they can confirm things,
mm-hmm.
but in my book, I explain that we have to find another starting point, and the starting point for the argument from design is the fact that there is design in this world, which is something we assume, by the way. It's not something we observe. I know some people say we can observe design, then we are back in science. That's fine. I have no problem with that. Science can point to God. You can say, yeah, if you think it through deeper, there is definitely a reason why there is a God. Yeah, yeah. But it cannot prove it, and I try to prove it with my arguments. This is the only argument of the whole series that cannot prove anything if you take it that way. So I made it let's call it a deductive argument.
Okay.
That you cannot avoid the consequences and the conclusions if you start it that way. So the design is something that has to be accepted ahead of time. So every contingent, every being that came into existence has a design, like glycoses have like effects. That is basically a design. They were designed in a certain way that the cause has certain effects.
Right.
And if that design cannot explain its own existence, it cannot. Nothing can explain its own existence, but then it existed before it came into existence. I repeat that again. So then there must be a first designer. And the first designer must be a necessary being and does not need to be designed itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a premise that no one can really reject. And if you accept that premise, sorry, then you are bound to accept the conclusion that there is a first designer. But then I have changed it into an argument like all the other
arguments. Right, I was just going to say, yeah.
Yeah.
So if the designer, so in this case, then you're really arguing that the designer doesn't need to be designed.
Correct.
Because he's the origin and the source of all design.
Yeah.
Yeah. So which
and
is.
And if you go the way you gave it the first interpretation, then it's an argument that you can easily attack. And I think I avoid that by using the argument as I just described it. Every contingent being is designed. Like causes have like effects.
Yep.
That's we didn't make those effects.
Right.
The causes didn't make those effects. A designer did.
Yep. Yeah.
The designer of this world, who created the laws of nature, those are basically designed things. A law of nature is a design feature.
No.
But again?
No, the, very good.
There is much more to the discussion, but I don't think we should burden each other with that.
Sure. No, I. This is very good. And by the way, I want to let listeners know that the book goes on to talk about the attributes of God as well, why God is all-present, all-knowing, all-good, why God is triune, why God is incarnate. And before we pick up anything there, though, I wanted to ask you, given that once it seems to me that once a person grasps what you're saying, these arguments, and they understand and they get past this idea of infinite regress, these are really firmly established arguments, and they provide a great deal of confidence. Why do you think it is that we have such a difficult time bringing people to see the force of these arguments?
Yeah, that is a very good point, because those arguments are so convincing that you wonder why didn't it convince everyone.
Right.
And I think there are several reasons. One of them is that they don't really want to spend their time on those arguments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you are not interested in sources, then you are not going to spend any time on a discussion.
Yeah.
Some people are not interested in God. Yeah. And what is even worse, they don't like the picture of the world with God in the picture.
Right.
So they are not willing to do that. As Thomas Aquinas always said, if arguments don't convince you, it's very often that the will doesn't accept that.
Mm-hmm.
And Blaise Pascal said the will sometimes prevents us from seeing what we should see and what we are forced to see. And where does that resistance to the willingness comes from? I always say it comes from the enemy of God, which is Satan, devil. So the devil is doing a good job. The devil knows that God exists, but he doesn't want that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, in the USSR, in the Soviet Republic at that time, they kept claiming all the time God does not exist, and they kept saying that and saying that and saying that. I said, why spend all the time to fight something that you don't want to fight because you think it doesn't exist? If God doesn't exist, you don't have to fight
him. Right.
Just let God rest in peace.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. So it's something inside of us that keeps resenting that. And some people, there are some theists nowadays, they were for a long time atheists. And finally, they changed.
Yeah.
I would say by the grace of God.
Yes.
I think one of the best examples is Jean-Paul Sartre. He was a very strong atheist French philosopher. And a few weeks before his death, he all of a sudden had a conversion.
Yes, this is shocking. I've heard about this.
A shocking conversion. And he had an interview with one of his former friends who always admired him, and he said, I know there is a purpose to my life, and I know there is someone who made me for a purpose. I thought, who? Did I read that right? Did I hear that right?
Right.
From Jean-Paul Sartre?
Right.
So he had finally given up his unwillingness to accept the arguments for God. And I think that's the best example that I wish everyone would go through if they are atheist.
Yes, yes.
But please, before it's too late.
Well, I wanted to point out, too, because we're just about out of time, that I love this book, and one of the reasons I love it is that throughout you have a discussion going on. So you've got an interlocutor, a questioner, that's with you through the book. So you're actually involved. This book is actually an extended, very sharp conversation, and I think that makes it even easier to read. So I wanted to thank you very much for that feature of the book as well, Dr. Versharen. Thank you.
Thank you for mentioning that part. That's a very important part.
It is.
Thank you so much.
We'll talk again.